I'm Jason Harris. I'm 27 years old. Today's date is January 22nd, 2015. We're at the Chicago Cultural Center, and I'm talking with my colleague.
Okay, Jason. Let's start with some background about you. Can you talk about who you are and how you came to be the founder of Jason's Connection?
My name's Jason Harris. I'm from Cincinnati, Ohio. And I came to be the founder of Jason's Connections because I always was looking for resources to do certain things like life coach or even medications and stuff. And sometimes even finding those things were really, really hard. It took a lot of hours and it was really word of mouth. And it took, I mean, sometimes you wouldn't even know of these smaller places. And I thought, shouldn't this be easier for people to be able to find social services?
Mm-hmm.
And wouldn't there be great if there was sort of a place that sort of had a database?
Okay. So going back to the very beginning, when and where were you born?
I was born on January 7th, 1988 at Christ Hospital in Cincinnati, Ohio. And it was actually around 6 a.m. and it was snowing, which has set a precedent on my birthday that it usually is snowy or cold.
How would you describe yourself as a child?
I had a alright childhood. It was my family was very close. I was happy, especially during the first parts. As I got older, getting made fun of and stuff, I dealt a little bit with depression, and I think that sometimes my parents were a little bit overbearing. Like when I was learning to drive. With a driving instructor, I would go out on the roads and stuff, but my parents wanted me to go on a back road behind our house that was too simple. And I did get my driver's license, but it took a while.
Jason, can you tell Erica what you were made fun of for as a kid?
I was ADHD. I was, I think I spoke out a lot. I had a lot of questions. I think, you know, it was one of those different, like, sort of nerdy people.
So they picked on you for being different.
Yeah.
Well, that happened to me too. It happens to the best of us. We haven't talked about, I know you talked about your parents being overprotective because of your disability, but we actually haven't talked about that yet.
Mm-hmm.
What is your disability and when were you diagnosed?
Well, I don't love to disclose it, not because I don't want to talk about it or things, but sometimes you get defined by it instead of being defined as a person. But when I was around first grade, they thought I had a learning disorder, but they couldn't exactly decide what. And so I went to schools for learning disorders, and then by the time I was in high school, I was looking at going to different schools, and I was looking at a boarding school in Connecticut for NLD and Asperger's, and I thought, oh, you might have NLD.
Mm-hmm. So what was school like for you, high school?
High school, I first went to a Catholic high school in Cincinnati, Purcell, Marion. And it was really interesting because it was either special ed classes, which were really simplistic, or there was regular classes, which were fun, but you didn't necessarily get any support. You were sort of, you know, you had to do whatever they asked you to do, and mm-hmm. there was no outside help from that. So I went to go to Franklin Academy, and I don't know how much different it was. I think the real thing I learned from that is that the idea of autism that we get portrayed by the general media isn't as diverse as we see it in real life. I mean, there were people there who were really good with sarcasm or, mm-hmm. You know, really brilliant mathematicians and whole people who, if you saw on the street, you would never know were on the spectrum.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's really what it taught me there.
Right. And so then you went to college. How did you choose the college you went to?
I chose a college I went to for two things. One, I wanted to be close to Cincinnati because I spent 3 years away
mm-hmm.
in Connecticut. And two, I wanted a good support system. And the College of Mount St. Joseph had one of the best programs, and they really help you become independent when you're learning instead of just somewhat support or special ed classes.
Mm-hmm. And so what did you decide to study in college?
I was definitely an outlier in my school. I decided instead of picking a general trade, I would go for liberal arts with a minor in philosophy. Mm-hmm. And I was one of the few people who was taking liberal arts at that school who was actually taking really tough classes.
Mm, okay. Mm-hmm. What were your favorite classes when you were there?
Oh, I had socialization of globalization. I've had a lot of philosophy classes. Ecology was really interesting. International politics.
Wow.
There was a lot of classes I really enjoyed.
Yeah, for the big ideas.
Mm-hmm.
So you graduated college and you had to decide what to do for work. And then about a year ago, you started your work with Jason's Connection. So mm-hmm. for everyone who doesn't know what Jason's Connection is, what is it?
It's an online resource that gives social services, including disabilities, mental health, but not limited to that. And one of the reasons that I think it's important that it sort of covers the whole board is we think of social services with disabilities separate from other things. And I think a lot of these things can have cross use for people. I mean, you don't always need somebody who with a disability who necessarily wants to learn financing, doesn't need to learn financing from a disability institute necessarily. They mm-hmm. can learn it from somewhere that's a nonprofit that's maybe working on financing with other people.
Right.
And I think, and then we also have an online magazine which I write for and do interviews, and we have other people, and it's really to give other people a voice through stories, but also by able to talk and sort of show maybe this isn't what we always think of as society.
Mm-hmm. So would you call yourself an advocate for the disability community?
I would not call myself an advocate for the disability community, and there's really two main reasons for that. One, I think we look at advocates and as this person can tell me everything I need to know about this particular thing, and we sort of forget that we need to also talk to people who, other people who have it, and that I'm not going to be representational of everybody, or whoever the advocate is, mm-hmm. is not going to be representational of everybody. And we sort of lose the we should talk to other people thing, and it's really important to be a self-advocate, or if you want to know somebody about somebody, help them become able to self-advocate. And secondly, I think we look at disabilities a lot in isolation, and I tend to look as the way disabilities work, but I tend to look at society as a whole mm-hmm. and what that tells, not really just focused on disabilities in of itself.
Mm-hmm. So how do you juggle your work for and with people with disabilities and the need to define yourself as a person and not a disability?
That's probably one of the toughest things you can do. I think, in general, we all get decided, oh, this is our job, this is who we are. But I think it's really setting clear guidelines that, oh, this is about sociological theories and this is about other things, and also making sure that you have outside interests and outside people, you know.
Mm-hmm. You're not just the person who talks about Asperger's, or you're not just, you know, you don't use the word the spectrum every 30 seconds.
Yeah.
You're
yeah.
an actual person there, too.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you hope to accomplish with your work at Jason's Connection? Where would you like to see the organization in a few years?
I'd like to see that there's a lot of organizations on there to give people a choice to make educated decisions about where they go to get social services and be able to improve, and that it goes through multiple spectrums. It's not just about disabilities or mental health or one particular group. I think it can impact a lot of people. I would like to see it form a community
mm-hmm.
in some ways. Hopefully at some point there could be forums where people can connect to each other. And, you know, I think the hardest thing is you think you're alone in some of these things
mm-hmm.
and just it's nice to hear, oh, I go through that too, or I understand what you're going through.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope at some point we are able to make it so that people don't feel so stigmatized by asking for help.
Mm-hmm. Part of what we do with the website is we tell stories. You do yeah. a lot of writing for the website, and I hope to do yeah. some too.
Yeah.
What do you most like to write about?
I love writing about issues that have to do with disabilities, but really it's not talking about disabilities. It talks away about how we as society look at something, or way that we as society treat something, or the way we do it. Like the Hawkins article was an article that was talking about Stephen Hawking, but it was really talking about who do we overlook
mm-hmm.
because we don't give people a chance, not even just with just disabilities, but overall.
Yeah, various backgrounds. Who are we excluding and who should be
mm-hmm.
included?
Yeah.
You do a lot of interviews as part of your work for the website, too. So I have a question. If you could interview anyone, living or dead, who would it be and why?
Oh, there's a lot of people. I would like to interview past family members and grandpa and sort of, you know, have that recorded just because it's cool to hear your family history. Mm-hmm. I think somebody like Darwin or, you know, even some big political leaders of the past like George Washington or Lincoln would be cool to interview. I think going back in time to prehistory and sort of talking to people then and sort of seeing what was prehistory like, since there's not a lot of records of that.
Mm-hmm.
Would be really interesting.
These are the kinds of conversations we have all the time about the big ideas. So let's talk about some more of them. What's one thing you want others to know about you, and what do you wish they would forget?
I think those questions kind of go together because I wish that people, not that I don't want to be like, oh, I do, I'm very okay with it, I have a disability, but that also isn't the only thing about me, and I really hope that people see me as a diverse person and not, oh, he's just somebody who's on the autism spectrum or he has NLD or ADHD. I want people to see me who I am as a whole person. I have interests and likes and things I want to do and, you know, whole things about my life. I think sometimes we forget, especially in this day and age, that we get this idea that people with disabilities, that's what their whole life's about. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot of people who do so many diverse things, and it's just a small fragment of who they are that they have a disability.
Mm-hmm. As I've gotten to know you, I hope is that more people get to know you the way that I do.
Yeah, I really like getting to know you.
Which is as a full person. What would you change about yourself and why?
I'd like to be taller. In society, height for males is kind of important. It's one of those things that we sort of base manliness on is height. And so I would like to be like 6'2". I wouldn't want to be like 7 foot, because 7 foot would be like have its whole bunch of own complications. But 6'2", usually the world sort of fit for 6'2".
The world will respect you at 6'2".
Yeah. 5'7". I'm 5'7".
You're 5'7".
Yeah.
You seem taller than that to me.
Really?
You do. No kidding. What would you never change about yourself?
This is going to sound really counterintuitive, especially for like people who know of autism, but I would never change my mind. The thing that most people see as a negative that I think really quickly and that it could, you know, that I can get overwhelmed can also be really helpful. I'm able to think deeply about issues and really hard about it. And sometimes I can do things that would take other people longer because I just get in a zone.
Mm-hmm. Case in point was that Stephen Hawking article.
Yes.
As your content director, I appreciate how quickly you can write an article that is very brilliant at the same time.
Thank you.
Yeah, one of the first articles that you and I worked on together was about Stephen Hawking, because the movie is out, The Theory of Everything.
And it was his birthday.
It was also his birthday, And people are really talking about Stephen Hawking again. Well, they're always talking about him, but they're talking about him, especially now. Eddie Redmayne just won a Golden Globe for portraying him. And so the question becomes... Well, you summarize it. There were three questions that you came up with that were really great.
There were three main topics, and one of them was if Stephen Hawking, because the thing that people don't know about Stephen Hawking a lot is he didn't really come down with symptoms until he was his mid-20s, and at that point he was already pretty well known and going for his doctorate at, I think it's Cambridge. Mm-hmm. And so, but if he was stricken with this beforehand, how would people really have the same respect for him that they did? And he was still able to talk until like the 70s when he already made some major publications and stuff. So the question is, like, would people still respect Stephen Hawking the way they would if his symptoms were more onset? Mm-hmm. I think the second one was, is Stephen Hawking more famous because he has a disability? And the reason we looked at that is most scientists, you don't really care about their personal lives.
You don't even know their names a lot of the time.
Yeah.
So, but everyone can tell you who Stephen Hawking is, whether they even really have that much of an interest in science or not. He's as much a pop culture figure as he is a scientific figure.
Yeah.
So, and then the final question of the article was, who else are we excluding from the conversation just because they're different? Not necessarily even disabled.
Yeah, but
from a low-income background, from another culture, from another religion, from any kind of background. Who are we not letting have a voice.
Yeah, exactly.
And what are we missing out on? So that was a really interesting article to work on with you.
Yeah,
we really sat down and we sketched out the points, and I thought it would take me 2 weeks to write that article.
Yeah.
And then the very next day you sent me the draft, and I was stunned.
Well,
it was really good.
Well, it was really helpful, too, to have, once it's sort of like, the hardest part is for me sort of like, what do I want to say and how do I want to say it? And that was really helpful to sit down and sort of talk it out, and that sort of helped it go by.
We narrowed it down to the three questions, the three main questions, and then you were off to the races.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, I wouldn't change your mind either. Long story short, I wouldn't change your mind
Thank
either.
You.
Why do you think people don't give others that are different a fair chance? Speaking of, you know, marginalizing people, why do you think we do so much of that?
I think it's a risk. I think we have to sort of get, it goes in with in-group, out-group, in that we sort of associate with people who are like us, and out-groups are sort of strangers that we have to be, that we feel that we must be cautious of, and sometimes it's harder for us to take the risk of giving somebody a chance that we don't know if it's going to work, if we're going to be working out, or in some ways it might be scary for us. Would they hurt us? Or in some ways, either emotionally or, you know, I think it makes people scared to give somebody who's different a chance.
So with all this stereotyping and pigeonholing that we like to do as a culture, how does that affect us as a society? How would we be better if we didn't do so much of this?
I think it affects us because we go based on baser instincts of with being careful and making quick judgments, which happens. But I think we can go past that by thinking through it. And I think we miss out on a lot of people who would have great ideas or great contributions. Or, I mean, so many people. I mean, everybody has some contribution to make. And sometimes I think we miss out on things that we could be really helpful if we just talk to people and got to learn who they are and not, I mean, you know, we're not so cautious.
Those labels of normal and not normal. You said something really interesting about normal, and I can't remember what it was. You said your definition of normal.
Nobody can say what normal is. They can only say what it isn't.
Exactly. Exactly. That was one of the best ways I've ever heard the quote unquote normal put. Speaking of, you know, normal, not normal, stereotypes, all these things, there are tons of stereotypes about people on the spectrum. One of the main ones is that you can't connect with other people. But you spent a semester abroad in London, and you traveled all over Europe, and you made friends, and you do all these public speaking engagements. I mean, how do you explain your ability to do that when that's one of those things you're not supposed to be able to do?
I don't think it's something that people don't want to do. I think sometimes, like, I remember in high school, they would say, you're not supposed to be good at sarcasm, or you're not supposed to be good around people. And I think sometimes when people have that expectation of you, you sort of live down to it. And I think, but I think there are a lot of people who do want to have connections. It might not be exactly the same way that everybody has connections. I mean, I don't want to, I'm not great at, I don't love having small talk. I love having deep conversations. And I think there's other ways. And there are people who are completely normal, who are completely fine at doing that. I met some of those people at Franklin. Well, what we would, and I said normal, but I mean, what we consider normal, which, sorry.
It's all relative.
Yeah, it's all relative. But, and I think there is a lot of connection. I think even with the thing, there's a lot of, oh, well, people on the spectrum really like to be with animals. And I think it's because it's animals aren't as judgmental as people. You know, if you don't do something right, they're not going to remember that forever or hold that against you or
they're
make fun of
you. They're very unconditional.
Yeah. But I don't think that doesn't mean that there's also not a need or want for human connection either.
So what motivates your interest in human behavior? Because you seem to be fascinated with it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think there's obviously a world outside of us, but I think in some ways we make our own world. We use language. We come up with language. We come up with political systems. We come up with idea systems. We come up with all these things. So in some ways, we make our own world in some ways. And understanding how and why we do that is, I think, really interesting to learn. And then in some ways, you can, if you understand why and how, you can try to change it if you need to, if it would be for the betterment of society.
Speaking of things you're interested in, why do you have such a great interest in the Ohio State University and its football team?
Okay, well, of course I'm from Ohio, so a lot of people are going to think it's just because of that. But Cincinnati sort of has a connectional discourse with Ohio State because there's a major university in Cincinnati and they had a rivalry in basketball. So I didn't really root for them until about 2009. And in 2008, when I was about 21, I got thyroid cancer. And I originally went to Christ Hospital, which is in Cincinnati, to get it, to get surgery. And then they said I was all right, but we wanted to get a second consultation, and we knew the surgery went a little bit over, so maybe there was still stuff left. So there was really three places I could go. One was the University of Texas. One was a medical school in New York City, and one was Ohio State. And just for the sheer fact that Ohio State was 2 hours away, and I wanted to go to checkups, and if I had to get another surgery, I would only have to go 2 hours instead of a plane ride. Mm-hmm. And so I went up to Ohio State, and the people there were really nice. The surgeon was really nice. The doctor who's there, we always have a good relationship with each other. I mean, she makes sure to call me if she sees something that might be a concern, and we just joke around a lot when we're there. So by being really comfortable with the people, I sort of started rooting for the school. Mm-hmm. And one of the really exciting things is that's the first team I've rooted to a national championship. was definitely an experience. I remember that was one of your first days, and I came in and
you were super excited. Yeah. You hadn't slept.
Yeah, I didn't sleep very well.
Being a Cincinnati sports fan is a rough deal. We don't often get a championship
in
anything. So you were pretty excited that day. That was a fun day. Mm-hmm.
The last time they got a championship was 1990, but I was only two, so I wasn't really rooting
for
the
really
Reds.
Didn't remember that.
Yeah.
So, wow, cancer. But you're cancer-free now, right?
Yes. Been almost 4.5 years, five in May.
So, I mean, do you have to go back and get checked periodically and make sure that you're still, I mean, will you have to do that forever or is there?
Yeah.
So basically your whole life though. I mean, why did you get cancer? Was it genetic? Was it just dumb luck? I mean, what?
They're still trying to find out. And actually, the cancer cells I have be used for research.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
So hopefully, yeah. I mean, yeah. It's bad that you had to go through that, but if they can find something out about it to help someone else, then that would be amazing.
Yeah.
Can you tell Erica how you felt when you found out you had cancer?
Actually, I was more scared not knowing what was going on and why I was having a little bit of trouble walking. I think once I sort of knew what was going on, it was sort of a sense of like, oh, okay, this is what's happening and I can get through this. And
you were having trouble walking? Is that how?
Yeah, because the thyroid makes it so you can become with a bunch of energy or no energy. Like, my knees would start to lock up, and I would have. So it was like, but it was only like sometimes. But that was really the more frightening part. The once I understood what was going on, it was more like, oh, this is something that I can face.
Yeah. I'm big on knowing, too.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you recovered.
Mm-hmm.
How do you look at your life differently now than before you had cancer?
Oh, I look at it very differently. I mean, one of the major things that you have when you have cancer is you have time. And that can be one really amazing because in so much of your life, especially I was in college and, you know, you're doing assignments, you're getting things done. And mm-hmm. for somebody who loves to think about big ideas, having the time to just sort of sit down and reflect and see, like, why is it this way, or what about this, or how does this all go together? Mm-hmm. It gives you that time that in life you don't usually have to be able to think about it because you're not worried about the next assignment or you're not worried about what you're sort of just in the moment, sort of like, oh, this is cool. Look at that bird out there. I wonder how it all works together in going to an ecosystem or...
So you were still in college when you got cancer.
Yes.
So you graduated college after cancer.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So did it derail your college at all? Were you behind or did you graduate?
Yes, I was behind.
Wow. So how long were you like sick and in treatment?
I had to take off the first semester of my of my second year. And in the second semester, I learned that I still had it. And due to a little bit of stress from that, I really only took two classes. So that whole year, I really only took two classes.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it wasn't like it wasn't a stress. It was just, I got told it was cancer-free. And then just to hear that you still had it was a little bit nerve-wracking, but it wasn't bad either.
So was it like a whole year that you were dealing with this cancer thing?
Yes.
But then you finally got better and you went back to school.
Yes.
So, you've been through so much so far. I mean, what's the hardest thing you've been through and how have you dealt with it and what did you learn?
I think the hardest thing is when you have a disability is being able to have a voice and gain confidence. Mm-hmm. And what I mean by that is when you're disability, you're so much told, oh, this is what you can't do or this is what you need to work on to get better. Mm-hmm. Here's how you're supposed to improve yourself. A lot of people learn how to put their best foot forward and show what they're best at. People with disabilities don't always get taught that. Because that's never what you're always working on, trying to improve things and not, if you're bad at something, that's what you're working on. It's not like for some people where if you're bad at something, you just hide it. Mm-hmm. But I also think it's tough because of that, people don't always think you know yourself well enough. Or that you have that. And I've had times where I was working on a speech. It was one of my first speeches. And I was working with somebody, really nice lady. She was the head of Excel. And we were writing stuff down. I'm like, please write it down in bullet points. If you write it down all together, I'll try to remember it verbatim. And lo and behold, she wrote it down, all the whole speech down word by word. And it was a little bit of a tough speech. And even people who are in the service profession, I had a life coach, and I have a little bit of social anxiety. And that's sort of why I have trouble with a little bit nervous around social skills. Not because I don't understand or don't get it or I'm not empathetic, mm-hmm. but So she's like, you should watch people and see how they're doing and then try to think about that. And my sort of thing was like, well, if I have an over tendency to be an overthinker, wouldn't that cause me to go into a spiral? And she sort of was like, you just don't want to try, which can be a common response sometimes.
That's really not fair, though. I mean, just because you look at it differently doesn't mean that you can't do it or that you don't want to do it. It's just that it's like me in math. I couldn't get to the answer the way the teacher wanted me to, but I could still get there.
Yeah.
I think it happens to a lot of people with a lot of things. If you don't tick the boxes, the way that we look at it, we talked about this before, how you're looked at from a deficiency perspective.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of what you're capable of, all the conversation is about is what you supposedly can't do.
Yes.
Which, and then you start listening to that,
mm-hmm.
and then you start to believe it. I mean, I believe to this day that I can't do math, and who knows if I could have or not.
Yeah.
But you start to listen to it. You get that voice in your head.
Definitely. I mean, even when you go, like, I just had to get retested to get certificate. I'm trying to take the GRE, and the report's like, you test in this percentile, and that's something I did well. And she's like, you test in this percentile and this, and you're going to need a lot of help to get through that, or you're going to need to, and it's like, even like, one, the things that are supposed to be positive are very numerical, and it doesn't, it's not very reassuring, and they really do harp on the things that you don't do well.
Mm-hmm. So you're going to take the GRE, or have you taken the GRE? Are you going to take the GRE?
I haven't yet. I got to really work hard on the math section.
Yeah, well, you and me would be in the same boat.
Yeah.
But do you hope to go to graduate school? I mean, is that something that you want to do?
I would really enjoy doing that. I love learning, and I love writing papers, and I think it would be a great experience.
What do you think you'd go to grad school for?
Sociology or anthropology, something like that.
People studies.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can see you doing that. So, back to that whole conversation about, deficiencies. Do you regret anything in your life?
I really try. There was a real time where I regretted a lot of things. And within the past year, I've really tried to not regret things because it just holds you back. It's more about working on it in the future and keep trying to, work on it and just going forward. I don't think you can look at the past and be too regretful about it, or it's going to be hard to move forward.
For what in your life do you feel most grateful?
I'm grateful for a lot of things. I'm grateful to have you here doing this with me. And I'm grateful for my family. I'm grateful to be in Chicago. I'm grateful that I'm able to have a voice and that people do listen to me now, because there's so many people who aren't able to have that opportunity, that they get overlooked, and they could bring such amazing things to the world.
I'm grateful to be here, too, and I'm glad that I get to work with you on Jason's Connection, because I really feel like our goal is to give those people voices. And so, speaking of voices, when in life have you felt most alone? I know you don't like this question, but...
It's a little bit hard. I felt really alone, again, when I was in school and getting made fun of and going through high school a bit. I feel a little bit alone right now, not like this minute, but I'm in between college and going to regular work life, and I'm trying to meet people. And I know for a lot of people with disabilities, their life can be very isolating, not because they want to not have friends and stuff. It's just a lot of people's lives is so, especially with disabilities, is so interclosed. There's not a lot of people, you know, if you say you have a disability, maybe people will see you as that, and it's like, oh, I really don't want to be friends with them. Or it's just, sometimes it's hard to get out there and meet people because you don't always have that contact with people that you might have normally. So sometimes I worry about it, but I think it'll be all right. It's just...
I think so. Through the course of your work and all the traveling and speaking you're going to do, you're going to meet so many people. And, you know, and some of them won't be great people, but some of them will be. And, you know, you'll wake up one day and you'll have friends, and you won't know how you became friends with them. But it just, that's how it happens. It's a little bit of magic.
Yeah.
How do you see yourself as adding to your community?
I really see as me adding to the community by being able to have, to be able to be a thinker and sort of say, oh, look at how this, and tell people maybe this is how this works and maybe we can make this work a little bit differently. I think, you know, ideas take a while to ferment, but I think they can be really powerful, and I hope that I can impact the community through ideas and helping people see maybe this is why things are done this way and maybe we don't have to do it that way.
You're a seeker. You ask the questions that you hope will make things change.
Definitely.
What have you learned from this amazing life you've had so far? What are the most important things you've learned?
One of the, always be nice to people. I mean, it's like we always think about being nice to people, but even like if you have a waiter or a waitress just saying thank you and stuff, just those kind little things are always nice. Sometimes it's not doing a bunch of big gestures. It's doing nice, tiny things for people that are just as appreciative than being doing like a huge gesture to like help somebody. People do things for reasons. They don't just do it because that's the way they do it. They're usually, I mean, sometimes that happens, but usually there was a reason that got started, or there's a reason that it's doing, and try to understanding why it is important. I think be nice, and that you can't, don't just judge people. You know, I mean, we all make snap judgments, but we need to be able to see past that when we finally meet people and see people as an individual rather than this person's this, so they must be like that, or so forth.
How do you want to be remembered?
I want to be remembered as somebody who hopefully helped change society with ideas. Hopefully a kind person, a funny person, someone people liked being around, and, you know, someone that will be remembered for, you know, for helping.
Is there anything else you want to tell people about you? Is there anything else that you really feel like people should know?
I don't know. I mean, it's just nice to, when you just come talk to me. I love talking. And I'll tell you things. I think, you know, I mean, maybe I'm a little bit shy. I get in the corner a little bit, but I will always talk to people if they come talk to me.
Mm-hmm.
I have a question. Can you tell Erica about what the biggest challenge with Jason's Connection has been for you?
I think the biggest challenge, and I think there's definitely going to be more challenges to come, and that'll be exciting. I think since it's been the first year, it's really, what are we doing? How are we going to do this? How are we going to make it so this can be something that's useful for people? It's sort of finding identity within the first year, I think, has been a great challenge. And I think we've sort of gone past that, and now we're coming on to new challenges.
How are we going to grow?
Yeah.
And how are we going to reach more people?
Yeah.
And who are we going to do that with?
Mm-hmm.
We have a good team. But oh, we've got a lot more work to do.
Definitely.
But I'm excited about it.
Me too.
It's gonna be great.
Can you talk about how many people you've reached so far?
Yeah, the website reaches, what is it?
We have 34,000 likes on Facebook, which is Jason's Connection on Facebook. We reach between 50 to 110,000 people a week.
So tens of thousands of people
are
connecting and reading the blog and reading the Facebook and participating in discussions.
Oh, yeah, just definitely.
And because that's really the point, I think, is having a conversation.
And asking us questions like, how do you do that? Like, well, how would you find a good college? Well, how do you go into college with a disability? Or, you know, just talking to us, like sharing your experiences, which is amazing. We love to hear people's stories.
Mm-hmm. Well, Jason, thank you so much for talking to me and answering my questions. And it's been great to talk to you today.
Thank you for having me.